And let's go to Rachel now in Portland, Oregon. Get us going. Rachel, thanks for holding so long. Go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, George. Kind of sorry I missed David. So, Mike, I don't know, can I talk about dreams with you?
You sure can.
So, I had a dream when I was really, really young, and I'm not really sure if it was a dream or out of body or something like that, but I was about somewhere between 7 and 8. I lived in a foster home, and I remember being, it was like I was held immobile, and it was a dark space. My arms were out to my sides, and I was in a dark space, and somebody was talking to me, or people, because it was like they were speaking gibberish, like a string of babble, but I understood it.
Were they like whispers?
No, it was like several recordings played all at once, and maybe backwards. It was just babble. But I understood the meaning behind it, not a direct translation.
What do you think this message was for you?
Well, the specific message was that I would, in my life, I would see terrible things happen, and I would not be able to do anything about it.
And has that happened to you?
Well, that's the question your screener asked, and I certainly haven't lived a normal life. But I think the message was more that I don't think they didn't specifically say the world's going to end, but it's something I've been waiting for most of my life, something similar.
This is the unfortunate part of living on this planet. We go through bad things in our life. That's the process of living. You know, we go through personal tragedies, don't we? We go through world events that are sad, to be sure. That's this planet. That's living, and you're not going to get away from it, no matter what happens, whether there's tsunamis or wars or situations where we have 9/11. These things will happen in our lifetime, folks, and you can't get away from it. It's part of living. You got to just pick up and keep moving. You know, Kennedy got assassinated. I mean, I went through all that stuff. I was 13 years old when that happened. Then we went into Vietnam. I mean, then it didn't stop. And, you know, Robert Kennedy got shot. Martin Luther King got shot. I mean, it just never stopped. It hasn't stopped. So if you let all of this bother you, as tragic as it is, it's going to destroy your own personal life, and you can't let that happen. I mean, you have to just keep moving ahead. Let's go to Angelico in Tucson, Arizona. Hi there.
Hello, George Norris. This is Angelico.
Hi.
I have a very interesting dream to tell you. I tried many times to reach you, but I wasn't able to get through. And now I'm back in Tucson, and the dream I wrote down was about you.
And, you're dreaming about me?
Uh-oh. Yes, listen to this. I wrote it down. It was exactly 3rd of April, 2 months before your birthday.
Okay.
I recall all my dreams since the childhood almost daily. It was not a dream, it was in a dimension, and I was completely aware. You were very exhausted and surrounded by many, many people. Then I took you aside. We both worked as workers in the light, and there are other people, too, who work with you and with me. And I'm not planning on it. I just wake up with this information. And I took you on the side, a smaller room, and there was only a few people sitting down. And then I came with a deep blue indigo plate with 9 dates on it. Date, like a fruit.
Mm-hmm.
9 dates, and I handed you 9 dates, and you took it, and you sat down, and you were exhausted, and I knew, and you knew, if you eat these 9 dates, that you will get new energy, and then around your throat, your chakra, around your throat,
uh-huh.
I took a band of energy, I'm sorry, I'm really a little bit nervous, a band of deep blue indigo energy.
It well, I am too, because I don't know what's going to happen to me in your dream, but go ahead.
No, this is it. The nourishing of anywhere depleted, that is it.
That was it. I wonder what it means.
It was not a symbol. It was real, true. It was real. And you took this and it helped you rejuvenate because everybody needed your energy. And there are people around you in the other dimension that help. We help each other when we are depleted because some of us are light workers. And I do have your book. And it was sent to me from one of my students in Europe, actually. Can you believe that? They bought it here and they sent it back to me, the Workers of the Light. Nevertheless, I just wanted to let you know it's positive, and the 9 dates, I don't know, dates, the fruit, not date, as in dating.
Yeah, no, not, I know, no, no. I know. You and I didn't go on 9 dates. I ate 9 dates.
You ate?
I should rephrase that,
you
too.
You ate, and it was something your system needed to rejuvenate. And right. I don't know, it was 2 months, I wrote it down exactly the date and wrote the whole dream down. It was more than a dream. It was totally awareness.
Well, that was very interesting. Angelico, thank you for that. And I'm glad I was able to rejuvenate myself. Let's go to Indianapolis, Scariest Hotline. Hey, welcome to the show. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Okay, so scariest moment I had. Well, first off, I've had very lucid and very vivid dreams my whole life that would actually come true. I don't know if they're kind of out of body or what, but when I was 6 years old, I had watched the first Nightmare on Elm Street with my dad, and it just terrified me to death. And after that, for 10 years, I had the most terrifying, vivid nightmares about him, just like the movies, him coming after me.
Freddy Krueger.
I would wake up completely anxious, sweating, heart racing. And, I mean, they just terrified me to no end. And what finally stopped it was in one of the dreams we were in a sewer, and he had just popped up out of his trash can that was sitting in the middle of the room, and I simply walked over and put the lid on the trash can, and the anxiety went away. I would still have dreams about him after that, but they were just dreams, not nightmares, and I actually enjoyed them because I would beat him in every dream.
Interesting. And you handled it yourself. That's good for you. Now, have you ever seen those episodes, those movies since then? And if you have, do they affect you?
Yes, I have. And I actually find them funny, kind of comical now.
See, that's the way to do it. You beat it. Let's go to Jeff in Ferguson, Missouri. Hey, Jeff, what's going on?
Oh, nothing much. Just enjoying the nice weather we're having.
Oh, it's been great, hasn't it?
Yeah, there are even rumors that we might get a little bit of a cold snap in the next week.
Really? Well, you know what? St. Louis is strange.
Oh,
you
yeah.
We may go just from a nice hot summer right into some cold weather.
Yeah, I think we even had a little bit of snow blizzard, and then it was like 70 degrees later on in the day.
Really? I didn't see that.
That was a couple years ago. But anyway, I wanted two quick things. How come you guys haven't done anything for the Star Trek 45th anniversary?
When is that? I guess it's now.
It was a Thursday, September 8th.
Well, that tells you. It probably slipped right by us.
Yeah, 45 years ago this week.
50th, we'll probably do something.
Yeah, anyway, I have some questions about the 9/11.
Yep.
Whenever I talk to 9/11 truthers, who believe the government had something to do with the whole thing,
right,
and they said a plane did not hit the Pentagon, I asked them 3 questions, and they never seemed to be able to answer them.
And what are they?
Where did the crew go? Where did the passengers go? And where did the plane go? They can never answer those questions for me.
No, they can't answer that. Some people may say and will tell you that the plane crashed someplace else, not the Pentagon. And that's possible. I mean, when you think about it, the reality is a plane probably hit the Pentagon and all those people died. My sister's, my mother's sister's husband, his brother died in a plane crash. His name was Doug Gowell. He was in Boston. He was going to Los Angeles. I think he might have been on Flight 11. But the problem with all this with the Pentagon, there really aren't any plane parts there, I don't think. I mean, somebody said that there was a picture of an engine. But I don't know. It just made a strange hole. The hole looks more like a missile than anything else. And so, you know, a lot of people who believe in the conspiracy portion of it, they think the plane went down, but they think it went down someplace else. You know, that was possible. But I don't accept the missile theory, but I sure would like to know more about the plane that crashed in the Pentagon. There apparently is some videotape of it, and it's never been released. We should see that, you know. Just put the doubts away and show everybody what it was. And there was one little white streak one that we saw that was released. But that, to me, looks more like a missile than a plane. Let's go to Ben in Louisville, Kentucky. Welcome to the show, Ben. Go ahead.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Okay, Ben. How about you?
Listen, I'm 70 years old and born in 1941. And I had a brother that I did not know personally. That went down on the USS Indianapolis in 1945.
Yes.
And I
just talked about that, too, on
a
couple months ago, yeah.
And I've been trying to get through to you. But anyway, one of his buddies on the ship who lived in North Carolina got my dad's address back in 1946, and he wrote him a letter and said that he was one of my brother's good friends. And they were on watch at midnight when this tragedy happened. And his buddy did not have neither one of them had life jackets, but my brother went and got a life jacket for both of them, but he came back and only had one for his friend, so he did not have one. And he said he was going to go try to get another one. So anyway, he did not see him again. And his buddy survived, the boy from North Carolina survived this tragedy. But anyway,
he was in the water, though, during the shark infestation and everything.
Oh yes, yeah. And you know, we visited him several times and have talked to him, and you know, he gets real emotional, and he does not want to talk about the tragedy, things that happened. And we also got another letter from one of his friends in California. And he knew my brother, George, and another fellow that were good friends. And he said he just wanted to let my family know that he knew that my brother had went down, because he said he saw him floating in the water, and he just looked like he went to sleep.
Yeah.
And he didn't seem to be suffering at any time.
I just wanted to tell you that story.
Very emotional. And
let me tell everybody that the USS Indianapolis, it was the ship that delivered parts for the atomic bomb in World War II. And then after it was done with its main job, the Japanese sank it. And most of the crew members had to abandon ship as it was going down. And they were in shark-infested waters. And most of those guys, until they got rescued, most of those guys got killed by sharks. It was a horrible, horrible story. Let's go next to Billings, Montana. It's Dan's turn. Hey, Dan. Welcome to the show.
Hey, George. How's it going?
All right. Rolling along here.
Well, I've got a ghost story for you.
Okay.
Happened in the winter of 2007. And at the time, I was homeless. And, you know, sometimes I was couch surfing at friends' houses or You know, most nights I would park my SUV up on the rims of Billings. Basically, the rims is a cliff that surrounds the city of Billings. It's about 150 to 200 feet, and we have our airport up there.
Okay.
And there's a highway that runs along. There's a, you know, spots for truckers and tourists to stop and rest and whatnot. So anyways, that night I was parked up there, got in the back of my SUV and went to sleep. About an hour after being asleep, I woke up to a loud thud, thud, thud on my window. And got up and looked out the window, and there was just a dark figure. I couldn't make out any features. I mean, it was just freaky, and it was frantically pulling at my door handle, trying to get in and pounding on the window, and, you know, it ran around to the other side. And
could you hear the thumping of the feet and everything?
Well, no, and the weird thing is I couldn't hear, you know, when you hit, you know, a window or something with your hand, you can usually hear the slap of
flesh. You hear it, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and all I could hear was a thud. It was just a really dull thud.
Huh.
So, anyways, this figure ran out into the middle of the road, and, I mean, you know, there are a few streetlights out there and stuff, and you still couldn't see anything. It was just a black figure running around in circles in the middle of the road.
You think it was clothed?
I have no idea. It was just a dark figure. It turned to run down the road, and it just vanished.
Could it have been an animal? Like an ape?
No, it was definitely, you know, human form. You know, so, I imagined it, you know, I don't know, maybe 5'8".
What about some guy in a black outfit?
Well, the first thing I thought is that, you know, the first thing I thought was when I heard the thud, well, it's an officer checking this, you know, checking up on me to see if I'm okay and what I'm doing up there or whatever. But, you know, after the figure vanished, I jumped in my driver's seat and I was all freaked out and I had rolled down the window. Well, when I parked my truck up there, there was just, you know, small amount of snow on the ground. And by this time, you know, 2 or 3 inches of snow had fell, and I looked around, and there was no footprints in the snow at all.
Nothing there.
Nothing there. And, you know, back in the 50s and 60s, there weren't any guardrails up there, so during the wintertime, cars would slide on the ice, and they'd go off the edge of the rims.
And oh, my gosh.
People would die. So, yeah, they're saying that the rims is supposedly the most haunted place in Billings.
Well, that could be. And you imagine what might have happened had whatever it was gotten in?
You know, I can't tell you, but one other thing I wanted to share with you about this incident, I didn't even think of this until about a year after it happened. I was sharing my story with a friend, and it just finally clicked. Earlier that night, me and my girlfriend at the time had purchased an Ouija board.
Ah, see? What you did is you opened up the portal. Hey, I got to take this quick break. We'll come back with more. Stay away from the Ouija board. Okay, welcome back to Open Lines here. Let's go to John, Bronx, New York. Hey, John, welcome to the show. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, George. It's a pleasure to talk with you for the first time.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thanks. I just wanted to touch base on 9/11. I was a first responder myself. I did 4 months down in the Ground Zero area.
Oh, my gosh.
With the Twin Towers, yeah. And, you know, I've heard all the stories from the skeptics that didn't believe this took place and it was a government cover-up and stuff. I mean, I got to see the plane's tires, one of the, you know, sets of tires that came off the plane. I mean, I was down there just after the plane hit, and it took place. There's no question.
Oh, yeah. It took, there's no doubt. The question is, how did it take place, and what was really behind it?
See, See, my thing was that the only question I had was with President Bush regarding that presidential daily briefing he had.
Yes.
He had gotten that daily briefing a day or two before it actually took place, the attacks. And he knew that there was a chance they were going to attack it. And all he really had to do was put out an order to lock the cockpit doors.
In my eyes,
it would have been a very simple thing to do, and they didn't do it.
And you know what? You talk about profiling, but they could have done that too.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They could have kicked things into high gear and said, look, if there's anybody, you know, they're foreigners, you know what? You know, we don't want to be racists here, but you know what? We've got these threats, and we need to watch the store here.
Well, that's the whole thing, and then it makes you wonder. I mean, his ratings at the time, his presidential ratings weren't doing well at all. And once the attacks took place, and then he came down and gave that speech on top of the mound and everything, and his ratings went through the roof.
They went through the roof, and everything changed after that, John. And let me tell you about some of the inconsistencies. You know, outside of the World Trade Center, while you were there working, and thank God you're okay, they found a passport from one of the hijackers. And I find that to be so unbelievably bizarre.
It's amazing how it manages to survive through everything, and they know exactly who the hijacker is from the passport.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if you saw the damage that took place down there in person and you were there to actually witness, I mean, I'm glad I didn't have to physically dig all that time on top of the mound because that was the worst place to be. I mean, the smell was like nothing you ever experienced. I mean, it was like walking into a war zone. That's the only way I likened it to people.
That's right.
I mean,
I believe one of two things happened, John, that either they were aware that something was going to happen and turned their heads, or there was a group involved. I'm not going to say government because, you know, I don't think government was involved, but I think there was a group involved that may have hired the Al-Qaeda kids, and they did what they did.
No, it is possible, and then my thing now is that, you know what, I mean, we got very laxed in the way we're handling things as far as things are pretty much up to a point back to normal, back to the way it was prior to 9/11. Yeah, they may have some increased security with certain things, but if somebody wants to get a weapon on a plane, it's very easy to do.
Absolutely.
You know, they've shown enough mistakes and made that way. And my main fear is that this is going to happen again. It's not a matter of if it happens, it's when it's going to happen. They're going to do something else out there. I mean, and yeah, we're on high alert now. Everything's going on out here and in the, you know, the main areas where this took place. But the rest of the country has to watch because you saw yourself what happened in California from somebody throwing a switch. How many people lost power?
That's right. Absolutely. Or look what happened years ago at Oklahoma, you know? I mean, there's all kinds of things.
Homegrown terrorism. But I just want to tell you thank you. I love your show, and keep up the great work, and have your CDs as well.
All right, my friend. You take care of yourself, and I'm glad you're doing well, too. Tom's got a text message for us back in Los Angeles. What do you got for us, Tom?
Hey, George, text from Carrie in Washington. She says, George, what's the nicest thing you have ever done for another person? P.S., when are we going to hear from Dr. Morgis again?
Well, you know, we played a little clip of Dr. Morgis last week, but you are working on getting him in the flesh, so we'll see how that happens. What's the nicest thing I've ever done for somebody? Gosh, I don't know, Tom. You know, one, you don't want to really brag about stuff like that, but, you know, there are little things that I've done that I feel good about. You know, sometimes a guy at the corner asking for money, and you just slip them something, and off you go, and stuff like that. There was a Coast listener who sent me an email a couple years ago, and his power was being shut off, and I don't know, that email just, I talked to you about that, you might remember.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
I paid his electric bill. We're paying down the mortgage of a lady whose house was near foreclosure. Reminds me, it's time to send her another check.
I've seen you do a few nice things, but we'll leave it at that because when we do nice things, we really don't do them to get any credit. You just do them.
Well, you know what? Let me tell you two things. Reputation is what people see. You know, you, me, anybody else, that's your reputation. When I go to speaking events, they see me do my thing. That's your reputation. Character is what they don't see. And that's that kind of a question. So I would prefer not to go into all the things that I think I've done for people in my life, because that's part of me. That's who I am. It doesn't need, you know, any special publicity. I don't have to go out, you know, and get write-ups about some of my deeds. I just, you know, I feel good about it myself, and that's all that matters.
It's all that matters. We'll leave it at that.
That's right. By the way, send me $20, would
you? See ya. See ya.
All right. Next up, let's go to Las Vegas. Hey, Jimmy, welcome to the show. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. I have been out and about this evening. I went down to the Strip, and I was really pretty surprised. I figured that there might not be as few people as I might like to see down there, but it was dead. It was dead as a doornail. And on the way home, I live in Las Vegas, North Las Vegas, so I go by Nellis. Let me get my little dog here.
Sure.
I go by Nellis Air Force Base on the way home. And normally, every once in a while, we'll see flights out of there, and they head towards the test site that's off to the north. And this time we saw several planes taking off, and they were heading to the south, which they never do.
It
may mean nothing, or it may mean something. There was a heavy police presence down there in the area that I was at along the Strip. So I think that people are very afraid to be in Las Vegas this weekend. And it's the deadest that I've seen it for a very long time on a Friday evening. And it's sort of eerie because earlier this week, a couple days ago, I saw the Apollo 18. And that definitely spooked me out. I'm trying to separate reality from non-reality on that. That was something else that really got me thinking about that.
Sure does. Let me ask you a little bit about the Strip. Of course, this being Friday night into Saturday morning, should be packed. Do you think most of the people in Las Vegas come from the Los Angeles area? They drive up probably, or they take quick flights from Burbank?
I do think so. We have at least a third of the people that come on any given weekend, and that would be around 300,000 people altogether visiting, do come from California. So it may not be that much of an issue for them. But the people that are flying in from the east and elsewhere, I think that they just sort of gave up this weekend, and I can sort of appreciate it because on 9/11, when I was here, I was up on Mount Charleston. I was at the Mount Charleston Hotel with my wife. It was part of her Christmas present from the year before. And we were up there at the Mount Charleston Hotel, and as we were checking out, we saw that people were gathered around the TV in horror watching as the buildings were struck. And when we checked out, the lady at the front desk said, I'm sure you're going to be very happy to be going home to Summerlin now. And we looked at each other and we said, no, not really, because we were thinking to ourselves, what's the next target, the great state, Satan? So we went higher up in the mountain, as high up as we could get, up to the lodge, and we spent the rest of the day up at the lodge. We wanted to sit it out as long as we could, and I'll never forget how eerie it was being down in Summerlin, being at our home that night in our hot tub, not seeing one plane up in the sky.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens, and I would guess that security is pretty heightened out there. It's pretty tough at some of these casinos anyway. You know, normally they have security guards looking at every car that drives in and checking them all out. So I'm sure they're doing even more of that now. Let's go to Malibu. Rick's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Rick, thanks for holding.
Hi. How you doing, sir?
Good.
Okay. I just had a real quick thing that for one of my scariest things that happened to me. I was back in the early mid 80s. I had just graduated high school. I was working for an armed security company, and one of our spots we had to stop was at the Forest Lawn Mortuary up here by the LA Zoo, off the 134 freeway. Mm-hmm. And we used to have to go in there and to get the keys to the gates to go patrol the cemetery, we had to go into the mortician's office to get the keys. And yeah, it was not a real fun place to be, first off, just to begin with. Right. Anyway, so I walked in, and they have like a, you walk in and you have to push a button and the big doors open up like a hospital doors or a hydraulic. And there's right there is a holding room where they have all the gurneys, and there's usually bodies on it with sheets over it and everything. And you kind of like not look at that and walk through and go back to the office to get the keys from the guy, whoever's working that night. And this was actually on a Saturday night. I'll never forget it as long as I live. And I walked in and I hit the buttons and the doors flew open and there was a body on the gurney with a sheet over it. And I guess the guy that was working there decided he was going to take a nap on one of the gurneys. And he jumped up and with sheet and all and everything. And I've seen too many, you know, that was back in the days where the drive-in movies, all the B-rated movies, you know, Land of the Living Dead, all that stuff. And yeah. I pulled my gun, which was a .357 Magnum, and I was, you know, going to shoot him right between the eyes. I've seen too many movies. You have to hit him in the head. And it was, I came very close. And so he screamed, and I screamed, and he screamed. Anyway, I'll never forget that. That's just a little scary moment there.
His little scream saved his life, didn't it?
Yeah, actually, it did. He doesn't know how close he came.
Oh, man, that's all he needs. Hey, thanks for the call. Let's go to Ormond Beach in Florida. Tim's with us. Hey, Tim, welcome to the show.
Hey, okay, can you hear me okay?
I sure can. You're out there. Our buddy Ron Rice lives out there from Hawaiian Tropic days.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's good to finally get through. I've been trying to get through. I wanted to talk to ask David, the guy with the
dream guy,
talking about
yeah.
the dreams. But, you know, I got you here. I'm a little nervous. Okay. Now, have you ever heard the situation where someone goes to sleep and they dream and they take control of their own dream and make it go their own way?
Absolutely. It's called lucid dreaming, Tim, which means you know it's a dream and you get in there and you do what you have to do with it.
Yeah. I've had nightmares where I've been chased by a two-headed dog with blood coming out of his eyes, and I'll turn him into a little kitten.
That's brilliant.
And put him on my shoulder, then I'll fly away.
That's great. That is.
There's one more question I want to ask.
Sure, go ahead.
What would happen if you were to intervene in a dream and decide that you wanted to stay there because it was so beautiful, it was better than your life?
Well, I think that's when you die. I really do. Those things would probably happen to you, and it's history time for you. I want to tell you a little bit about what's in store here, and also a real quick statement. Be diligent this weekend, as you should be all the time, not just on this weekend alone. But as you know, there is a heightened alert from some pretty good sources that something in this country could happen in one, two, or maybe more cities from those who just want to topple our way of government and our way of living. So just, you know, wherever you may be, just say a little prayer for this nation of ours, and let's hope everything gets through okay. Anyways, on our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to be talking about the Planet Dine. We've got Ian, of course, on Saturday, and John B. Wells is going to be with us on Sunday, and we've got a great group of programs for you for the rest of the week as well. And we'll be back to more open lines the following Friday. That's how fast time goes by. So sit back and enjoy, because this is our Friday night tradition with none other than the UFO Phil.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling, Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, I also see a ghost. new coat. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening. See the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast.
For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Tim Binal, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and pundit and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.